So the technique we're doing is electrophoresis. And electrophoresis is a separation technique. There are a lot of different basic separation techniques in science. For instance, centrifugation, which we've already talked about, separates things based on their different weights. Distillation is a separation technique. That's how you make booze, because the yeast that you use to make beer or wine make alcohol, but once it gets a certain strength, it will kill them. So that's why wine is only so strong. To get it stronger, to make liquor, you have to take that already fermented mixture and then distill it, which separates things based on their different boiling points. Get rid of the water, and you get rid of the alcohol, and then collect it. The rest of it's left behind. Anyway, that's a separation technique. Well, electrophoresis is also a separation technique that separates particles based on a few things. It based on their sizes, their shapes, and their electrical charges. And that third one is very important. In order to use electrophoresis, at least some of the particles in your mixture need to be electrically charged. If you have a mixture of a bunch of different kinds of particles, none of which has a charge, then electrophoresis isn't going to do anything. Because the basis of electrophoresis is that charged particles are going to be attracted to an oppositely charged end of the apparatus. That apparatus that has the gel in it is an electrophoresis chamber. And now that I've turned it on, I have applied a voltage or a potential across the length of the gel. So one end, the red end, is positively charged, the other end is negatively charged. If you have a particle in your sample that's not charged at all, it's not going to move in either direction. If you have a negatively charged particle in there, it's going to move toward the positive end of the well. And if you have a negatively charged one, it's going to move toward the... Each kind of charge is going to move to the opposite charge, right? I can't remember how I started that sentence. So anyway, you prepare wells in electrophoresis, and you can make the wells anywhere. For instance, you could have a gel with the wells halfway down the length of the gel. And that's what you would want to do if you had a mixture that included some positively charged and some negatively charged things. Because some of them are going to move upward in this figure and some of them are going to move downward depending on their charge, right? Notice we didn't do that. We started with a gel, all of the wells of which are at one end. You only want to use that kind of gel if you're sure that all of your particles are of a certain charge. Well, our particles are DNA, right? Fragments of DNA, millions of copies of them that we made from PCR last week. It doesn't matter what sample of DNA you're using. If it is DNA, it's going to be negatively charged. Why is that? Because of the phosphates. There's a phosphate in every nucleotide. Doesn't matter what the DNA is from. Phosphate in every nucleotide, and phosphate has a negative charge on it. So since we know we're using DNA, we set it up this way. But importantly, you want to make sure you put this gel in the apparatus in the correct orientation. You want to have the wells at the negative end and the other end toward the positively charged end. Because DNA, being negative itself, is going to be attracted to the positive end. You want them to move this way. If you put it in backwards, they would just spill right off the edge of the gel and you'd lose your samples. Okay? So that's the basis of the separation, is that particles move, if they're charged, through the gel. And it's kind of like swimming through gel or through water, which you probably never swum through gel. But if you could imagine, not actually swimming, imagine being in a swimming pool where the water's up to your chest, and walking through the water. It's difficult to walk, right? Compared to walking in air like we usually do. Well, your body is a certain size that doesn't change. But if you try to walk through the water with your hands spread out, it's going to be even harder, right? This is where the shape of the particle matters. How quickly it travels through the gel depends on the size, the shape, and the charge. The charge determines the direction. The size and the shape determine how fast it travels. So if you have a sample that is a bunch of different particles of DNA, all in the one well, they're all going to move in the same direction if they're all DNA. But they're depending on their size, they're going to move at different speeds. And therefore, electrophoresis is kind of like a race. They all start at the starting line, which is where the wells are. And they move at different rates and therefore separate from each other as they travel through the lane. Now, importantly, and this seems backwards at first, the smaller a particle is, the faster it's going to move. It's easier for a small thing to get through a viscous gel than it is for a large thing. So that means if you see bands, which we eventually will, if you see two bands, for instance, that would mean that the one that got farther in the same amount of time was smaller than the one that didn't get as far. Okay, the farther away from a well you see a band, the smaller the particles are that are in that band. Now, by the way, a band, which won't be visible while the thing is running, but it'll be visible once we put it under ultraviolet light. A band is not a single piece of DNA. It's millions of pieces of DNA of the same exact size, and therefore they all move at the same speed, so they stay together. You wouldn't be able to see a band if it's just one piece of DNA. That's why you use PCR to make millions of identical copies so that there's enough for you to be able to actually visualize a band. Okay, does all that make sense? All right, now back to what the actual experiment was about. You chose samples of owl DNA, and we made copies with PCR, but PCR does not make copies of the entire fragment of DNA that's in the sample, the original sample. That's because you can set up PCR to make copies of just a specific section of the DNA that you're interested in. Remember the stuff that I made and squirted into your tubes? That has the ingredients that are necessary, all the nucleotides and stuff, for it to work. But it also has pre-built primers. Now, real cells use primers, as you've already learned about, right? Well, in PCR, you design the primers to be exactly complementary to a certain sequence of DNA in your sample that it can find. And that's why it doesn't amplify the entire piece of DNA. The primers get in there, and if that complementary sequence is in the sample DNA, the primer will stick there, and then you start adding from that. So what's amplified is really just a specific sequence that you're looking for. And in the case of the owl DNA, the primers were designed to look for a certain sequence of DNA that's on the sex chromosomes. Birds don't use the XY system like we mammals do, but it works the same way. It's the ZW system instead. There's a Z chromosome and a W chromosome. It's opposite from us, though. In mammals, a male has one of each, an X and a Y. A female has two X's. In birds, the male has both the same, and the female has one of each. Each of them, though, the X and the Y chromosome, has this stretch of DNA that includes the thing the primer looks for. So whether it's Z chromosome or a W chromosome, the primers should find that and amplify DNA from that chromosome. The thing is, the male version of the, or I mean the Z chromosome, which males have two of, has a longer stretch of DNA that starts with that sequence it's looking for. And so PCR will make millions of copies of that. The other kind of chromosome has a little shorter section. So it'll still find that, and PCR will amplify that as well, but all of those copies will be shorter. All right? And they'll both, I mean, depending on your bird, you'll have millions of copies of just the Z if it's a male, or millions of copies of Z and millions of copies of W if it's a female. Does that all make sense? In the same well when you start today that you've loaded. So if it's a male, since they have only one kind of chromosome, all their DNA fragments will be identical, and you'll see only one band. If it's a female, you'll see two bands because they're different sizes and they therefore move at different speeds. Okay, like this. Now, what would the male one look like? Would it match up to the bottom one or to the top one? It has only one band if it's male. Why the top one?
Because the Z chromosome is longer, or this section of the Z is longer.
Right. It's bigger, and therefore doesn't move as quickly. So you should see either this or this. And that will tell you whether it's male or female. That's the whole idea behind what we're doing. But you use electrophoresis for a lot of techniques, for a lot of reasons, not just owl DNA. Okay, so that's going to take a little bit more time to... You have to run this thing long enough so that they separate enough. If you start to visualize it too early, they might be right on top of each other still, and you won't be able to tell. By the way, importantly, you don't want to run it so long, or they'll just go off the other end eventually, and you waste it. That's why the loading dye, by the way, is colored, because you can't see the DNA until you put it under UV, so you have no idea where the lanes are. But the loading dye is designed to be smaller than anything you're looking for. So, and you can see it because it's orange colored. So wherever that dye front is, you'll see if you look at it that it's already moving. The orange is moving. But you know, since it's smaller than the DNA, all the DNA things are behind it. As long as you don't run it so long that the orange goes off the edge, you're good. All right, so we'll look at that and hope. Sometimes we don't get results for this, so don't be disappointed if you don't. But anyway, that's how it's supposed to work. While we're waiting, as soon as I shut up, the other thing you're supposed to be doing today is modeling gene expression. And usually they have arts and crafts things sitting out, like pieces of things you can use for your models. That's actually not necessary. It's perfectly fine to just draw it. But it's good to actually do the modeling just to learn it and memorize it, to remember it for the test. Now, you should already be more familiar with transcription than translation, because we just learned translation. So, if you want to do both, transcription and translation, fine. And you can use whiteboards or you can just draw it on paper, but talk it out. Make cartoons of these things. If you want to do just translation, that's fine as well, if you're comfortable with transcription. But model at least translation. And don't just copy a picture that's already in the book. Try to remember what goes on in translation and make your own cartoon, talking it out and labeling it. Do that while we're waiting on the electrophoresis to run, and then we'll look at them. Okay.